Rolene Marks, talking to us from Israel this morning. How are you?
Good morning. I think like all of us, we are very emotionally spent this morning.
All right. Give us some context, Rolene. What a week.
It has been quite a harrowing week. I think in Israel, we've watched the COVID infections increase. Just last night, it was announced that we will be opening up the third booster shot to anybody over the age of 40. I'm already booked to get mine.
What, are you using false ID now?
Definitely, Howard. Yes,
gosh, yes. Rolene, and to say such a thing on radio. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Hey, I'm proud of my age, people. What can I say? But, this has happened, and, you know, the good news for South Africans, again, is that you're on the orange list, which means that you have to do mandatory quarantining upon arrival for 7 days once you come to Israel. That is the law in place. But, and I've had quite a few inquiries about this. We are not in lockdown, and we are not going to lockdown. I think it's very, very important that people understand that the government, this is Naftali Bennett, the Prime Minister, it's also the head of the Bank of Israel, have said that the absolute last resort will be a lockdown. Right now, the priority is getting everybody vaccinated. Going down to young children, the discussion about the possibility of vaccination stations in the schools, 24-hour vaccine capability. This is our priority right now. So just to clarify, Israel is not in lockdown, and we are not going to lockdown unless it's an absolute last resort.
Naftali Bennett made a fantastic speech, I think, on this, where he really showcased an understanding of the nuances between balancing all of these factors. What did you think about that?
Well, it's interesting, you know, looking at what the Prime Minister is saying, because, you know, many are looking at him saying that his Prime Ministership, albeit for 2 years for the moment, how he will handle COVID and the pandemic in Israel will likely define his legacy, will define his premiership. And he has struck a balance between, you know, us having to protect our health, protect our safety, guard against incoming variants, but also ensure the mental health of our pensioners, of our children, our children deprived of so much. I know, as an avid listener to you and Dr. Marburg with your podcast, the incredible toll that this is taking on children. Also the economy. The economy is also one of the main priorities, and the Bank of Israel governor recommended that, you know, lockdown not happen. We are all looking at countries like Australia quite befuddled as they go into lockdown upon lockdown upon lockdown. We are seeing the ramifications. I know I have friends with businesses who are really struggling with the impact of these lockdowns. And this is something that we want to try and avoid as much as possible here. Naftali Bennett earlier this week saying that if we go into that kind of situation, we may not recover. He said the price tag for the three previous lockdowns was 200 billion shekels. That is extraordinary. And he's looking at the long term. He's looking at education in the long term. He's looking at the ability to give pensioners their pensions in the long term. And he's very concerned about Israeli families running into extraordinary debt because of lockdown. So he's really approaching it, I think, from a very holistic, a very rational approach.
I think incredible. I think very, very impressive. Look, he's also got the advantage that Netanyahu, to be fair, didn't have, which was right at the beginning. He didn't have any of this knowledge. Whereas Bennett now can look back and learn from the lessons of what was done well and what wasn't done well. Staying with Bennett, he's off to meet Biden.
Well, this is going to be very, very interesting. I would love to be a fly on the wall next week when the two leaders meet. You know, it has been the most harrowing week as we've all watched Afghanistan with absolute sorrow and horror at the scenes that we are seeing unfolding on the ground. You and I have spoken off air extensively about the images of people falling from airplanes, the images last night of mothers throwing their children over the barbed wire fencing towards the soldiers saying, please take my children to safety. These are decisions we can't even begin to comprehend what a mother, what a woman in Afghanistan must be going through, not to mention the humanitarian catastrophe as the withdrawal of the US and allied troops will leave on the ground. And there is a lot of discussion around President Biden and the way that he has handled this. You know, you and I as commentators try to be as even-handed and as balanced as possible, but it has been very, very difficult this week watching his press conference, some might say the arrogance of which he spoke to the media. His appearance on George Stephanopoulos' show on ABC, George Stephanopoulos, a former aide to President Clinton, the only journalist that he's actually agreed to sit down and answer questions, and the astonishing lack of accountability and arrogance. And for us, as a major ally of the United States, who have counted on American support as we approach Iran, as we have to look towards what will happen if the Iranians, if the Americans re-enter into the nuclear deal, which is what Biden wants and what many European countries want. We have to think of Israel. We're also looking at the way this week has been handled, the ramifications for American allies like the United Kingdom and Australia, who weren't made aware of the fact that the Americans were withdrawing and how their plans or lack of plans were going to play out. And it's left allies of America feeling very, very shaken, very, very doubtful.
Vulnerable. I think vulnerable. Because I think
Vulnerable is a major one.
To me, this sends a very clear message to Israel to say no matter what, you can't necessarily count on America, because it's the support seems to be, although it's obviously deeply entrenched, it is still at the support of a president. And if you have somebody incompetent at the helm, well, then you're on your own.
Well, this is it. And he has to take accountability, because what has happened in Afghanistan has happened on his watch. Mm. You know, we know from watching the events of the last 20 years since the attacks on 9/11, we understand very well in the Middle East what these terrorist players are like, what their ideology is, how they perform. They look for the vulnerabilities. They look for the vacuum so that they can come in, which is what we're seeing with the Taliban. I don't for one split second believe the very, very slick media charm offensive by the Taliban, so-called 2.0. We can see what's happening on the ground for ourselves, and the lack of accountability by the Biden administration is just astounding. And yes, it has left us feeling vulnerable, but it has also reinforced a message that we have heard various Israeli generals and security leaders say over the years, which is no matter what, we have to be in a position to rely on ourselves. So it's going to be fascinating to see the two leaders come together on, I think it's Wednesday, they will meet at the White House, because it's not just going to be a test of looking out for what's best for Israel, but it's also going to be the first time they come together. It's their first official meeting. How are the personalities going to meld? You've got Biden, who is very idealist. He's some might say a woke president. He's a president who says his foreign policy will be based on human rights. It's going to be based on a human rights agenda, which we find preposterous watching the situation in Afghanistan.
Not exactly a success story.
not exactly a white paper to study with. And now we've got Naftali Bennett coming in. He is seen as a more right-wing ideologue. However, this is my opinion. We also have to separate Naftali Bennett, the leader of the right-leaning Yamina party, from Naftali Bennett, the prime minister of a coalition of a variety of different parties and ideologies, the most diverse in Israel's history. So it is going to be very, very interesting to see what will be discussed, how they will react to each other. I'm looking forward, and I'm giving you homework. It's my turn, Howard, to give you homework. The body language that we might see coming from.
I'll definitely look out for that. I definitely
will. And will they be wearing matching ties? That is, of course, very important.
Of course. There's been a lot of criticism, of course, from the Democratic Party, particularly from the squad around Israel, repeated, and just non-stop commentary about Israel and their position on it. What have the squad in that portion of the Democrats been talking or saying about Afghanistan?
Well, when you hear something, will you let me know?
Oh, okay, fine.
I think they have said much more about what they have not said. We heard kind of a slight murmurings from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's probably the least radical of the three women. I mean, when we talk about the squad, we invariably speak about Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She's kind of put out a mealy, maybe I should say something without saying something. Very excusable commentary coming from her, but zippo coming from the other two, cricket, and nothing coming, of course, from our supermodel Sports Illustrated Middle East experts or our talk show hosts, all our blue tick social justice warriors all over Instagram, or our irrelevant actresses trying to be relevant. I'm talking to you, Ellen Barkin, Susan Sarandon, rappers, pop
Trevor Noah. Trevor Noah. Where's he with all of this? I certainly haven't seen anything. Maybe I've missed it. It is possible.
It must have happened so fast that you and I missed it. And I'll read you what we've heard from people like Bernie Sanders, who says foreign policy matters. And of course, he talks about the loss of soldiers. Again, completely absconding responsibility for the women of Afghanistan. Let's see, we have heard this from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and you can read into this what you want. For all those who lost, sacrificed, suffered, and served in the last 20 years of war and occupation, the United States has a singular responsibility in extending safe refuge to the Afghan people. If we can just reaffirm that the Americans were not occupying Afghanistan. The Americans and the Allies had forces in Afghanistan to try and maintain calm, to try and help the Afghan government of the time build up, but they were certainly not occupying Afghanistan, AOC. And she says, we have a moral obligation to the Afghan people. She says, we must waste no time or expense in helping refugees safely and swiftly leave Afghanistan. That's all she said, but she hasn't expressed her concern about the situation for women on the ground, the humanitarian catastrophe, and of course has not criticized Biden, neither has Kamala Harris. I was quite appalled to see the first female vice president of the United States not give one comment towards the humanitarian situation on the ground, and especially the situation for Afghan women and girls.
Well, they've hardly ever said anything about the women of Iran, so I guess we shouldn't be surprised. Before I let you go, can we just talk about Qatari funds? I wanted to get a quick update from you on that.
So this is very interesting. So Israel has found a way through speaking to the United Nations, through to Egypt, Egypt moderating and ensuring that this happens, is that we will allow Qatari funds to enter the Gaza Strip, but using a different mechanism. So what will happen is that that Qatar and the UN will send these $100 salaries for 100,000 families, which amounts to about $10 million, each month through the United Nations and the UN World Food Program. Israel will monitor how this happens, and we will monitor the bank accounts how this happens. So the funds will go to a Palestinian bank in Ramallah and there to a branch in the Gaza Strip, and we will oversee, Israel will oversee who receives these $100 cards.